The Bob Siegel Show, sponsored by Bob Siegel.
The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Primetime Media Group and the law offices of Matthew Simone.
Recurring themes on The Bob Siegel Show can also be found on his online column, Forbidden Table Talk.
It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel. So, you'd like to believe in God, but... You wonder, in the Bible, the Jews are portrayed as God's chosen people. Well, okay, if so, why is there so much hatred of Jews in the world today? Why is a people supposedly beloved by God hated by so many others? Anti-Semitism is often viewed as a mystery. In fact, I don't know if you've ever thought about this. One of the few emotions shared by extreme right and extreme leftist fanatics is a hatred of Jews. It's one of the only things they can agree on. Actually, the Bible does offer a spiritual explanation. God's enemy is Satan. Now, you may not believe there's a Satan. You may not even believe there's a God. I've done many radio shows authenticating both. On this program, we've gone through evidence for the existence of some kind of God, evidence that this God is indeed the God of the Bible, evidence for the resurrection of Christ, and yes, evidence that the same Christ's enemy, Satan, really exists. We have talked about it before. We'll talk about it again. In the meantime, you can listen to back radio shows or read many articles on this subject off of my website, bobsiegel.net. But for the moment, assuming the existence of both God and Satan, Satan hates the Jews, and Satan is able to influence people. He lives in another dimension. There's a back door to people's minds. We could call it a kind of telepathy. He is able to influence this world, the philosophy of this world. He hates the Jews. Why does he hate the Jews? Well, one reason is very explicitly stated in Scripture. In Revelation chapter 12 and 13, from the Jews, Jesus came. Jesus was a Jew, and when people receive the forgiveness of Jesus as offered on the cross, Satan loses their soul. Now, another reason can be deduced. Not only did Jesus come from the Jews, the Bible also came from the Jews. Satan probably hates that just as much. But since so many people either ignore the Bible or misinterpret the Bible, the true spiritual reason behind anti-Semitism remains a mystery to most. And for this reason, other ideas, false ideas pop up, giving fodder to their hatred of Jews. Nazi Germany, of course, is the most famous example of anti-Semitism, but anti-Semitism is making a comeback now all over the world, not only in the Middle East, but all over Europe and on our college campuses in America. But still, we think of the Nazis first, and in Nazi Germany, on one hand, the Jews were described as a secret federation of greedy capitalists who wanted to take over the world. On the other hand, for those with opposite concerns, the Jews were a conspiracy of communists who wanted to take over the world. Complete contradiction. You see, those who believe in conspiracies never need to worry about contradicting themselves and never need to make a whole lot of sense. Neither do they feel compelled to back up their claims with documentation. After all, if the facts were that obvious, it wouldn't be much of a secret conspiracy, would it? Of course, long before the Nazis, throughout the Middle Ages, it was a different charge leveled against the Jews. The Jews were called Christ killers. Now, since I myself am a Jew who converted to Christianity and follows Jesus Christ, you can probably guess that I have one or two opinions about the notion of Jews being Christ killers. Well, a moment ago, I mentioned a true biblical explanation for anti-Semitism. Now we're talking about a false belief, foundational to the original anti-Semitism, which claims in the minds of many to have origin in the Bible, but which is in fact misreading the Bible. I will talk about this in much greater detail later on in today's program. First, the latest news, and of course, I don't have to tell you that anti-Semitism is a large part of the news, because the Democratic Party is having trouble keeping their anti-Semites in order. But that's just one of many hypocrisies of the Democratic Party. Lately, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez has been asked why she still flies in planes and rides in gas-guzzling cars. She explains this by saying that a plane gets her to Washington, D.C. faster. Actually, the trains get you faster in many cases. But anyway, that's her explanation. She gets to Washington, D.C. faster, thus enabling her to better serve her constituents. She also tweeted, "I also fly and use AC. Living in the world as it is isn't an argument against working toward a better future." Now, Miss Cortez, I thought you had predicted a dead future in 10 years where none of us will be able to live in the world anymore, real world or otherwise. Time's a-wasting. What better way to serve your constituents than to practice what you preach? On the other hand, don't stop flying in planes on my account. You don't have to stop eating hamburgers either. I am not one of the masses mesmerized by your Pied Piper Green Deal. You're very good at telling people what to stop using. Unfortunately, those who follow you have also stopped using their brains. Hopefully, a few of them will reactivate their brains at least long enough to observe your hypocrisy. Of course, it's not just hypocrisy. There are several criminal accusations now being announced against Miss Ocasio-Cortez, but I wouldn't hold your breath about anyone going after her. Most Republicans don't have the courage. And while some, like Lindsey Graham, maybe might possibly attempt something, the mainstream media will certainly have their back, just as certainly as they had Hillary's back and Obama's back regarding Benghazi. You remember Benghazi? Benghazi was a real crime, a real scandal, something that actually warranted a true investigation. And speaking of criminal investigations, it's time to do some definitions. True criminal investigation. An irrefutable crime has been committed. A search is launched for the criminal. False criminal investigation. There's someone you just don't like, so a search is launched hoping he committed a crime. Now, which of these two do you think is being applied on President Trump? Yes, the second one. Thank you for playing. We have lovely luggage for you. Congressman Jerry Nadler said this regarding President Trump. "You've had 2 years of sustained attacks by an administration of the nature that we haven't seen probably in a century or more against the free press, against the courts, against law enforcement, against freedom of speech." Seriously, Nadler? Seriously? The same week, Trump signs an executive order demanding free speech on college campuses, something your party doesn't seem too concerned about. You share this drivel accusing him of being against free speech. FYI, Trump's very free usage of words in 2016 resulted in his election because people were happy to hear some blunt talk about Washington. This refreshing free speech is the only speech that's in any real danger these days in Washington. The deep state, since Trump got elected, has been circling the kitchen like cockroaches who once hid in the dark, now in plain view with a light turned on. Oh, but not according to Nadler. What kinds of examples is this partisan hack offering of Trump being against free speech? Well, Trump calls out the media, referring to many outlets as fake news. He's not arresting any of these journalists, mind you, as they would do in certain other countries living under socialism or communism, ideologies Trump also speaks out against. All he's doing is speaking out about these news outlets. Where was Nadler when Obama did exactly the same thing with Fox News? Look, agree or disagree with Trump's assessment of the mainstream news, and he's often right anyway, Calling out the news is itself an example of free speech. So is calling the Mueller probe a witch hunt. He can call it anything he wants. He's a citizen of the United States, protected by the same First Amendment Nadler claims to be supporting. Unfortunately, Nadler's support for the First Amendment doesn't come with a whole lot of personal examples. And so, Mr. Nadler, who is the one trying to forbid free speech by attempting to draw a correlation between Trump commenting on an investigation and obstructing justice? Oh, that's right. You. And Nadler, before you give any more self-righteous lectures about the president being against law enforcement administrations, let me ask how you say that with a straight face when you support sanctuary cities that are disobeying federal law. But then, leftists don't have to be consistent. They just have to be leftists. Well, not all of them are just leftists. Some of them are also anti-Semites. Now, you've heard what's been going on in the news this week. A recently elected representative to the House of Representatives, Democrat, named Ilhan Omar. She's been doing a lot of talking lately, and finally there was a straw that broke the camel's back, and there was all this talk that the Democrats should come out and condemn her and her anti-Semitic remark. Well, let's back up and see what started this controversy. Well, actually, she'd already said a lot of controversial things, but the thing which caused the chain reaction, which led to this resolution, so-called, Omar retweeted journalist Glenn Greenwald. He's a frequent critic of Israel. And this was the tweet. It's stunning how much time U.S. political leaders spend defending a foreign nation, even if it means attacking free speech of Americans. Now, Omar added some words of her own that ignited all kinds of controversy. It's all about the Benjamins, baby. Now, just so there's no misunderstanding who she was talking about, she was actually asked who she was talking about. And she answered the question pretty plainly. She said, AIPAC. AIPAC is the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee. Umar has also tweeted, Israel has hypnotized the world. May Allah awaken the people and help them see the evil doings of Israel. Last week, before the Democrats recrafted that resolution speaking out against anti-Semitism, I went on Facebook and made a prediction, and I'll read that prediction. You'll see how much of it came true when we return to the Bob Siegel Show. I'll give you a little hint. All of it came true.
Now at 888-344-1170. That's toll free, 888-344-1170. Bob may have strong opinions, but he also likes to hear what you have to say.
When you trust the care of your children to others, it's comforting to know they share the same Christian values, that what you teach your children at home is also taught in their preschool environment. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is an all-inclusive preschool where the staff ministers to all children of all abilities, including children with special needs, through a curriculum developed by the owners and designed for the preschool-aged child 3 to 5. During these preschool years, your children will make important developmental gains, as well as social and emotional development, that'll be the foundation for their overall success in life. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is a state-licensed, Bible-believing, Bible-teaching preschool and a nonprofit 501c3 organization. Contact us now at WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com and secure a space for your preschooler. WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com or call 619-440-1044. 619-440-1044. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool.
Oh,
Welcome back to 96.1 FM, 1170 AM. I'm your host, Bob Siegel. We're talking about this so-called resolution that we got from our Democratic Party to make it clear that they condemned anti-Semitism. And right before the break, I told you that a couple of days before that came out, I made a prediction on Facebook. You can go to my Facebook page and still see it, and still see it dated. But here's exactly what I wrote. Just watch. By the time Democrats are done with their resolution against anti-Semitism, quote unquote, it will be broadened to include a rebuke to any criticism of Palestinians or Muslims, even though people who offer such criticism are talking not about peaceful Muslims, but Islamist terrorists, and the fact that most Palestinians, including especially the Palestinian Authority, do not recognize Israel's right to exist. Okay, that's what I wrote on Facebook, and it happened exactly as predicted. Not that the prediction was a difficult one, but they also included just about any other kind of bigotry they could think of and listed a whole host of persecuted people groups, although unborn and newly born babies as a result of botched abortions somehow failed to make the cut. Also, conspicuously absent, the naming or criticism of Representative Ilhan Omar, whose anti-Semitic remarks began all of this. Okay, listen, folks. Well, certainly there are many religious groups and ethnicities that fall victim to the bigoted remarks or actions, and while all such racism should be condemned, this was not the time and place to draw up a list which does little more than amount to the statement, all hate is wrong. Something we were already taught in kindergarten. Something we would expect the United States government to adhere to without needing to vote on it, without needing to put it in writing. All this does is camouflage the original offense and allow other agendas to hijack the narrative. Agendas which use the word racism as a way of shutting up political dissent or as a way of masking their own racism. Two examples. First, many who have rushed to Omar's defense this past week already viewed the informal rebukes she received as an example of Muslim hatred and will now undoubtedly feel vindicated in political victory since the hatred of Muslims is being condemned side by side with anti-Semitism, when in fact the problem has to do with the actions or words of only some Muslims, some like Omar. And of course, also on their list, you didn't really think they were going to leave this one out, did you? The Charlottesville protests, going back now to the year 2015, the people can't stop talking about it. The Charlottesville protest mentioned in there in the hopes of reminding us of President Trump's unpopular comments about the rally. Actually, and this cannot be overstated, President Trump was falsely accused of defending the KKK. By falsely, I refer to the fact that his words were literally ripped out of context. In fact, he made no such defense by acknowledging peaceful protesters on one side, but pointing out that violent thugs such as Antifa were also on that same side, and then pointing out that not everyone on the other side was KKK. Some on the other side were merely protesting the removal of a statue of Robert E. Lee, people who had absolutely nothing to do with the Klan. Trump referred to blame on both sides and fine people on both sides. He was not including the KKK as an example of good people. He was including both the KKK and Antifa as examples of bad people. Now look, for the record, I personally am a Northerner without a lot of sentiment for statues of Robert E. Lee. I do, however, have sentiment for the news being reported accurately. When President Trump claimed that some people protesting the removal of the statue in Charlottesville, Virginia, were not white supremacists and were only trying to protect a monument, he was speaking the truth. Oh, without question, those particular people would have been wiser to not join in a rally where there were also Klansmen. But that does not mean Trump is not honestly describing the situation. It's difficult to do demographics of a meeting like that, since a lot of it is spontaneity. We do know that many on that side were white supremacists, probably even the majority. That at least would be my guess. But the only relevant fact is what Trump thought about the makeup of the protesters. He responded to what he heard, and he had 50 million other things on his mind, and he made the comment. If at that time he thought there were multiple reasons for the protest, then we have to accept what he said as a sincere reaction. Yes, sir, you can always count on the left. They never let a crisis go to waste. So Omar makes this comment about Jews. Naturally, they're going to find a way to implicate Trump. They're going to implicate Trump in all this before it's over. Now, while Trump's name may not be in the resolution's official wording, Nancy Pelosi spilled the beans anyway, just for those of us who aren't smart enough to connect the dots. She said, the president may think there are good people on both sides, but we don't share that view. And so, in the name of condemning anti-Semitism, the Democrats have also managed to call out a president who has done more for the state of Israel than any other president since Harry Truman, and whose own son-in-law is Jewish. They attempted to try this trick by moving the conversation slightly and subtly and sideways towards Charlottesville. For this reason, it would not be remiss to remind ourselves that Trump is also a president who has brought black unemployment down to historic levels and is beloved by many, many outspoken, prominent African Americans. I'll list some of them when we return to the Bob Siegel Show. This is Bob Siegel. With the wiring in your home, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. For all you know, he may have gotten his license by sending in 3 serial box tops.
Hey, these things happen. There's nothing wrong with my wiring. Houses burned down. You wanted a guarantee? You should have ordered the deluxe package.
Folks, play it smart. Call WNS Electric Incorporated. They specialize in contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, WNS takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I use them myself, and I wouldn't call anyone else. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for WNS Electric, license number 480539. WNS Electric.
Looking for a book you won't be able to put down? Push the Winds Around is a romance set in the context of science fiction. Dr. Brandon Krieger is given the opportunity of a lifetime, a psychologist's dream. Through the usage of his physics professor friend's time machine, Brandon travels 20 years back through time in an attempt to change one man's destiny. Tom Kyle, a convicted and unremorseful murderer, is located in the past when he was a 6-year-old boy. Brandon's mission? To alter Tom Kyle's path and prevent him from being a vicious killer. Matters are complicated when Brandon finds himself falling in love with young Tom's mother. Push the Winds Around, a novel by Bob Siegel. Available on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com.
So let's review. A Democratic Congresswoman, Omar, makes an anti-Semitic comment. The Democrats, to prove that they're not an anti-Semitic party, get together and they say they're going to condemn the comment. And then in condemning it, they whitewash it by listing all kinds of other examples of racism. And they go out of their way to mention an alleged, but untrue, alleged racism against Donald Trump. And here this man, who's Israel's greatest defender, who has a Jewish son-in-law, they managed to implicate him by slightly changing the subject, since they're not only talking about anti-Semitism, but other kinds of racism. They remind us of Charlottesville, with some of his context taken out of context again, comments that you know, are just not being accurately represented in the media. So what we want to do is remind ourselves of the things that this president has done regarding the lowering of black unemployment. And I mentioned right before the break that there are many prominent, outspoken African-Americans that really love this guy. Candace Owens, Kanye West, just to name a few, Ben Carson, Larry Elder, singer Azealia Banks, Mike Tyson, Dennis Rodman, Diamond and Silk, Pastor Daryl Scott, too many others to list, although I will take the liberty of listing just one more, Alveda King, Martin Luther King's niece, who shared her support of Trump, among other places, right here on my radio show last year. Not that real, honest-to-goodness, black-hating racists aren't still around. They are. And such bigots usually have something to say about the Jews as well. They never leave the Jews out. Remember David Duke? He complimented Congresswoman Omar. Doesn't that speak volumes right there? He just loves how she rails on Israel. He reminds us that Zionists are, quote unquote, the most powerful political money bags in America who put another nation's interests over that of America. Let me say it once again. One of the few places where those on the extreme right and those on the extreme left agree is in the area of anti-Jewish bigotry. Another reason why the original motion to condemn an anti-Semite should have simply been left alone. Why did such an appropriate gesture get turned into a bowl of compromised mush? Because Omar was defended by many of the new wave of freshmen, including the new informal head of the Democratic Party, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. Notice how she keeps popping up like a jack-in-the-box? Pelosi crumbled. She's afraid of losing her status as majority leader. Look again, Nancy. You already lost. Ocasio-Cortez runs your party no matter whose name is there formally. Now, by putting anti-Semitism on a list, they have watered down the verbal injury. This resolution is to condemnation what President's Day is to commemoration. Nothing. Absolutely nothing. That is nothing but an emboldening of Trump haters, an emboldening of the very woman who began this discussion, Ilhan Omar. Now, one of the defenses being offered on behalf of Congresswoman Omar is that one can criticize Israel without being anti-Semitic. That is not entirely true. I want to be fair, but it's not entirely true. It all depends on what one means by criticizing Israel. If it's some naive blather that they're repeating about a two-state solution, well, that shows ignorance because the Palestinian Authority actually doesn't want a two-state solution. However, there is a difference, of course, between being ignorant and being anti-Semitic to a point. It all depends on how extended this ignorance is. When people say there's a conspiracy of rich Jews who want to take over the world, for example, well, they may believe that sincerely, but such beliefs fall within the definition of bigotry, since bigotry and racism include stereotypes which ascribe identical personality traits to everyone or almost everyone of the same race. That is not to say that we don't have a lot of rich Jewish people. We do. But we also have a lot of poor Jewish people. We have a lot of rich Gentiles. A recent Forbes list of the 400 richest Americans did include 100 Jewish billionaires, but there are an additional 300 Gentile billionaires. And yes, sometimes rich people use their money to manipulate things, and yes, sometimes they're Jewish. George Soros comes to mind. But ladies and gentlemen, Soros is not of the religion Judaism. He's a Jewish atheist and a leftist, and he's anti-Israel. And many of the Jews, most of the Jews in America, they're not so anti-Israel that they want Israel to cease to exist, but they often take the side of the Palestinians, very stupidly, in my opinion, like a circling firing squad, but they do it. And so to say that there's this Jewish lobby out there that's overemphasizing Israel, well, not the majority, certainly some, but not the majority. And I speak out against Soros all the time on this show. I do so as a Jew myself. I do not criticize Soros for being Jewish. I do criticize him for being a leftist. Now back to Israel. Many of Israel's enemies go beyond making a few comments here and there about Israeli policy. They call for the destruction of Israel. Since Israel is the Jewish homeland, since Zionists are simply people who believe the Jews are entitled to their own homeland, an anti-Zionist is someone who does not believe Jews are entitled to their homeland, which means an anti-Zionist is an anti-Semite. We must not allow anti-Semitism to get by with the flimsy mask of anti-Zionism. It's really not a mask at all. It's just a new excuse. It's just a new Trojan horse. Civil rights leader Martin Luther King Jr. actually tried to warn us years ago about the relationship between anti-Zionism and anti-Semitism, a trend not limited to the Middle East, but also found amongst Americans who form opinions about the Middle East situation. These are the words of Dr. King. When people criticize Zionists, they mean Jews. You are talking anti-Semitism. Now, affirmation of this position is also attested to by Clarence B. Jones, a close friend, advisor, and attorney to Martin Luther King Jr. He said, "I can say with absolute certainty that Martin abhorred anti-Semitism in all its forms, including anti-Zionism. Martin warned repeatedly that anti-Semitism would soon be disguised as anti-Zionism." Yes, true beliefs are often masks, but you would be surprised how easily the mask can be removed. For example, we generally won't find a Muslim on radio or TV who officially embraces terrorism, at least not in so many words. They renounce terrorism categorically. But I have found that one very simple question reveals how these so-called moderate spokesmen honestly feel. What is your opinion of the Israeli-Palestinian situation? And we'll talk about this little revelation when we return to the Bob Siegel Show. Bob Siegel. Looking for a church? Maybe not. Perhaps you've had your fill of churches. Maybe you even grew up in the church. Maybe as a kid you were dragged to Sunday school against your will. Maybe you used to throw spit wads as Mrs. Pumpernickel tried desperately to interest you in the missionary journeys of the Apostle Paul. You may have grown up listening to long sermons, anxiously looking at your watch to see how much of the game you were missing at home on TV as the pastor made his 97th point. Or perhaps you were not raised as a Christian at all. Instead, you have merely encountered Christians. Maybe some obnoxious personality tried to shove the gospel down your throat using all the tact of a lawnmower in a barber shop. Well, my friend, perfect Christians don't exist because perfect people don't exist. That's why Jesus died for our sins. So I'm not going to tell you that the people of Skyline Church are perfect. I'm just going to tell you that we come real close. No, actually, you'll just find people who struggle with life the same as you. But we're honest about the struggle, and we help each other with the struggle. What you will find is a church that takes the love of Jesus Christ seriously. After all, his message is one of mercy and inclusion, and we don't need 97 points to talk about God. Ask anybody. Our sermons have never made more than 96 points.
Skyline Church, Sunday morning services, 9 a.m. and 11 a.m.
Some criticism of Israel without being an anti-Semite? Yes. Can they be an actual anti-Zionist without being an anti-Semite? No. Because an anti-Zionist is somebody who does not believe in Israel's right to exist. A few years back, I had a Muslim apologist on this very radio show. He renounced terrorism right at the beginning of the interview, But when I asked him how he felt about Jimmy Carter encouraging Israel to make deals with Hamas, the terrorist organization elected into office by the Palestinians, oh, I heard a much different kind of answer. He explained that we do not have good options today in the Middle East. He also went on to say that the Israelis were every bit as much terrorists as Hamas. This kind of moral equivalency argument serves as a Freudian slip of sorts. If one sees no difference between destroying terrorist strongholds and some thugs strapping on a bomb and blowing up a bus that includes innocent women and children, if one can excuse the Palestinians for putting a terrorist government into play, indeed, if one can forget that the PLO and their gangster leader Yasser Arafat basically invented terrorism as we know it today, then this person is not really renouncing terrorism. This is nothing new in America. It may look new because it's made its way to the Democratic-run House of Representatives, and it's been talked about so much this week, but it's not new. In 2009, 200 pro-Palestinian demonstrators stood in front of a courthouse in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, facing a smaller group of pro-Israeli supporters. The organized event was a response to Israel's so-called invasion of the Gaza Strip, land that Israel had given back to the Palestinians as part of a peace treaty, land that was now being used as a headquarters for continued terrorist attacks against Israel, including daily missile bombardment. One of the signs in front of this courthouse in America said, "Nuke Israel." But that was nothing compared to the words of a woman there who shouted at the Jews in the crowd, "Go back to the oven. You need a bigger oven." Now, of course, ovens were used by the Nazis to exterminate live Jewish babies in concentration camps when the Allies were approaching toward the end of the war and the SS was in a hurry to cover up its crimes. So this woman is shouting about ovens. Emmanuel Lopez, who helped sponsor the Fort Lauderdale event, responded to the troubled chant. What choice did he have? This event was sponsored by ANSWER. ANSWER stands for Act Now to Stop War and End Racism. It probably occurred to Lopez that anyone calling for the extermination of an entire people was not the most credible face for an organization that wants to end racism. Well, admitting that some anti-Semites had found their way into this group, Lopez then explained she does not represent the opinions of the vast majority of people who were there. Well, perhaps not, but Lopez then went on to say that Zionism in general is a barbaric, racist movement that really is the cause for the situation in the entire Middle East, with disclaimers like those, who needs affirmation? Getting back to the Democratic failure to condemn by sandwiching it in between all kinds of other examples of racism, I already mentioned that David Duke defended this lady. Another defender, Linda Sarsar. In fact, this leader of the Women's March took credit for influencing the Democrats to change their wording. These are Sarsar's words. And you know, being able to mobilize progressive leaders across the country to sign on to a letter to organize a press conference in support of Ilhan Omar to call on the Democratic leadership to actually expand the language of the resolution to include condemning all forms of bigotry, because that's the kind of movement we're a part of. Okay, so Sarsar is calling for the elimination of Israel, and in this other statement, she's mentioning that she worked hard to get the anti-Semitism kind of camouflaged, as I say. Now, this lady also spoke at a Louis Farrakhan rally. Farrakhan, you know, makes no bones about equating anti-Zionism with anti-Semitism. He equates Jews to termites. He says Hitler was a great man. And Sarsar said this at this rally: "The same people who justify the massacres of Palestinian people and call it collateral damage are the same people who justify the murder of young black men and women." Okay, putting aside the lie that conservatives justify the murder of blacks, it is also a lie that Israelis are massacring Palestinians. The only killing instituted by the Israeli government is a defensive response to terrorist attacks. That's it. And at this Farrakhan rally, Sarsar shared the stage with controversial pastor Jeremiah Wright. By the way, I'm not sure I'm pronouncing Sarsar's name correctly, and I don't care. Anyway, whatever we pronounce her name as, she denounced Israel as an apartheid state and said that Jesus was a Palestinian, or that's what Reverend Wright said while he was sharing the stage with her. Reverend Wright says Jesus was a Palestinian. Ladies and gentlemen, the New Testament clearly identifies Jesus as a Jew. The ancient Roman historian Tacitus identifies that ancient land as Judea. The land was renamed Palestine under 2nd century Emperor Hadrian as a Latinized version of the name Philistine, an ancient enemy of the Jews. Hadrian did this to insult the Jews. Arabs did not come into that land in any great number until after Muhammad in the 600s. And Arabs in the Holy Land called themselves Arabs until the 1960s, when Yasser Arafat invented the myth that an indigenous people group called the Palestinians had lived in the land since ancient times and the Jews had no historical claim to the land. So much for Jesus being a Palestinian. Again, false teaching about the Jews, historical revision about the Jews is also part of the definition of anti-Semitism. Calling the Jewish people occupiers and denying that that's their land is no different than calling them a conspiracy of bankers. Meanwhile, another defendant of Omar, who has also been seen with Louis Farrakhan, Democratic woman Rashida Tlaib. She wrote a column for Farrakhan's publication in 2006. And while she claims that is not an endorsement of the man, that is quite an association. Those who give her a free pass will not give a free pass to statue remover protesters who were seen next to the KKK. And in the case of Rashida Tlaib, she, like Omar, calls for the elimination of Israel. There's a map of the Middle East in her office. Israel is not even on the map. Back to a question posed at the beginning of the program. Is the New Testament itself anti-Semitic because it calls the Jews Christ killers? We'll get to that when we return.
You know, it's common in today's uncertain economy to feel apprehensive. After all, the seemingly limitless choices in the housing market can look quite confusing. You might even know people who shared their difficult experiences with the housing market, sometimes losing money instead of what they had hoped would be a simple and profitable procedure. Well, here's the good news. Realty Executive All Areas here to help. Our track record is proven. Listen. Since 1994, we've sold thousands of homes in the San Diego area. What may seem like an obstacle to you is just a challenge for us. We thrive on multitasking and achieving goals. When faced with opportunities or unique situations, our level of determination goes into overdrive. We're confident we can use our skills to attend to your personal needs.
You can reach my friend Fred Valduti at 619-719-7717. That's 619-719-7717.
Or fredfalduti.com. That's Fred, FALDUTI.com.
Not sure when to try an unusual novel? Let the customers speak for themselves. Here is another Amazon customer review for Bob Siegel's latest book, The Dangerous Christmas Ornament. While there is nothing in this book that would stop you from giving it to or reading it to your kids, this book will certainly hold an adult's interest as well. The Dangerous Christmas Ornament has it all. Magic, talking cats, bullies who get their comeuppance, fun dialogue, and a good story. Do not let the title fool you. While Christmas does play a prominent role, this is really not a Christmas story, and it can be read at any time of the year, except February 31st. The Dangerous Christmas Ornament, available on Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com. So we're returning to the question posed at the beginning of the program. Is the New Testament itself anti-Semitic because it calls the Jews Christ killers? And we've just touched on the Middle East tonight. I do have a whole book on the subject
called The Holocaust Against Israel. You can find that on Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble. But anyway, getting back to the idea that the New Testament is anti-Semitic, that is not an accurate portrayal of the New Testament. It is instead an idea taken out of context by religious hypocrites in the name of Christianity. Jesus, very early in his ministry, said that in his name he would be misrepresented. He said, "Not everyone who says to me, 'Lord, Lord,' will enter the kingdom of heaven, but only he who does the will of my Father who is in heaven. Many will say to me on that day, 'Lord, Lord, did we not prophesy in your name and in your name drive out demons and perform many miracles?' Then I will tell them plainly, 'I never knew you. Away from me, you evildoers.'" This interesting discourse given early in Jesus' ministry proved to be very prophetic. Therefore, hypocrisy in the church, well said, is not a phenomenon which contradicts the words of Christ, for he not only spoke of hypocrisy, but hypocrisy in his name. Having acknowledged that there are Christians who falsely represent the New Testament, I must also admit that the New Testament does assign some credit to some Jews for Jesus' death. Now stop before you clutch your chest or fall out of your chair. Allow me to explain. Any conversation about Jesus is pointless until we understand Jesus' actual claims. Whatever you personally may believe about Jesus, he actually taught that he was God incarnate, the creator of the universe visiting the world in the form of a human being. Even the title Son of God was considered a claim to deity in those days. To the ancient Jews, the idea of a mere man claiming to be the God of Israel was as outrageous and dangerous a false teaching as could possibly be. Unless, as I said on last week's program, Jesus was telling the truth. But the Sanhedrin, the Jewish puppet court allowed by the Romans to have limited jurisdiction because they were conquered people under the Romans, limited jurisdiction over internal affairs, this court did not believe his claim and had no recourse but to denounce him as a traitor and blasphemer. Under Roman law, the Sanhedrin did not have the authority to kill Jesus, but they would have if they could. Instead, they gave him to Pilate, and he had Jesus killed. Thus, all the debate about who killed Jesus, the Jews or the Romans, actually it was a collaborative effort. Some claim that this New Testament report not only contradicts the facts of history, but also does so with an anti-Jewish agenda. Well-intentioned and sincerely misinformed, they fail to take several key things into account. First of all, the New Testament does not teach that all Jews killed Jesus, rather certain hypocritical Jewish leaders, or at least turn them over to be killed. Many other Jews in Israel followed Jesus, and the original church was made up of Jews. His disciples were Jews. Even some of the Jews who later on voted in that court to have Jesus executed later on became Christians themselves. We read about this in the book of Acts. A second thing to keep in mind, the New Testament was itself, for the most part, written by Jews. Every book except the book of Luke, written by Joel, and Acts, that was also written by Luke. Now, please grasp the significance of this. It is from the Jews that we get the account that Jesus was killed by Jews. Although these authors had converted to Christianity, their love for Israel never went away. Just like, look at the words of the Apostle Paul in Romans. He says, "For I could wish that I myself were cursed and cut off from Christ for the sake of my brothers, those of my own race, the people of Israel. Theirs is the adoption as sons. Theirs the divine glory, the covenants, the receiving of the law, the temple worship, and the promises. Theirs are the patriarchs, and from them is traced the human ancestry of Christ, who is God over all, forever praised. Amen." Also, that was common even in the Old Testament, or Holy Scriptures, or Tanakh, as Jews would want to call it. Jewish writers in that testament were painfully honest when fellow Israelites did not obey God. That's one of the greatest arguments that the Bible is trustworthy, because generally nations tend to paint themselves in a positive light. You're thinking, yeah, but Bob, aren't Jews under a curse for killing Christ? In fact, didn't they call that curse down upon themselves? No, the Jews are not under a curse. Neither are they the only nation responsible for the death of Jesus once again. The Romans are equally responsible. Actually, it can be argued that everybody is responsible. If not for your own personal sins and my own personal sins, Jesus would not have needed to come and die. His death was not an accident. It's not like he and his disciples were planning a trip to Hawaii and the crucifixion ruined everything. Dying was his purpose in coming and then rising from the dead. In any event, both the Jews and the Romans are forgiven. It's true that the Jewish crowd in front of Pilate tested fate with some terrible words. I'm reading from Matthew 27. All the people answered, "Let this blood be on our heads and on our children." They did call down a curse. However, and I cannot overstate this, this curse was neutralized by Jesus from the cross when he said, "Father, forgive them, for they do not know what they are doing." Those words applied to all who were responsible for Christ's death. Think about it. If Jews were under a curse, then how do we explain the Holy Spirit's miraculous blessing of the early church made up of Jews and led by the Jewish apostles? I'm reading from the book of Acts. Everyone was filled with awe. Many wonders and miraculous signs were done by the apostles. The believers were together and had everything in common. And once again, keep in mind that it was not merely the average Jewish populace that converted to Christianity. Many of the very leaders who were hostile to Jesus during his ministry also converted. Acts 15 tells us a number of Pharisees were part of the church. Acts 6 says the same thing about Jewish priests. It says, "So the word of God spread, the number of disciples in Jerusalem increased rapidly, and a large number of priests became obedient to the faith." Jews who became Christians did not start turning on their own people. If anything, they now had even more love for their people. I already took a look at Paul. Let's look at another thing he wrote. I ask then, did God reject his people? By no means. Now, another reason for portraying the New Testament as offering more blame to the Jews than the Romans is its portrayal of Pontius Pilate. After all, the New Testament paints Pilate as a man of conscience and weak backbone who wanted to please the Jews. But ancient historians like Josephus and Philo portray him as a brutal dictator who massacred the Jews and cared nothing about their cause. So they wonder, did the New Testament clean that up? How do we explain Pilate's fear in the Gospels? Well, this obvious change of attitude is easily explained when we supply an important missing piece of the puzzle. Before Pilate's encounter with Jesus, he had another encounter, a not-so-pleasant encounter with Emperor Tiberius. And this ruler of Rome actually brought Pilate's anti-Jewish policies to a screeching halt. Four prominent Jewish princes had complained about Pilate to the emperor. They had pleaded in vain for him to stop his policies. He didn't listen to them, so they sent a letter. They went over his head to Emperor Tiberius. Tiberius responded sharply with a letter of his own and demanded that Pilate remove these shields that had pagan writings, one of many things that the Jews were protesting. Now, decide now for yourself if Pilate's political back-and-forth persona in the Gospels makes sense. He has been rebuked by the emperor for his treatment of the Jews. Out of the blue, Jesus is thrown his way, and as governor, it is his decision alone to convict or acquit. Out of fear, he now wants to please the Jews. He's been told by the emperor, "You better please the Jews, or else." Well, which Jews? The Jewish leaders? The representatives of the Jewish court who want Jesus dead but cannot legally execute him? Or the many followers of this very popular Jesus person? At first, Pilate seemed to be catering to the people at large, but that changed when the Sanhedrin played this wild card, and they said, "If you let this man go, you are no friend of Caesar. Anyone who claims to be a king opposes Caesar." Could Pilate, after finding himself on the bad side of Caesar — that was the informal name of any Roman emperor — he's on the bad side of Caesar, can he ignore those words? No. And that explains Pilate's wishy-washy behavior. We'll see you next week.
The Bob Siegel Show, sponsored by Bob Siegel.